It's time for the Food Mensch, Arthur Schwartz on Robin Hood Radio. My favorite time. Hope it's yours. Hi, Arthur.
Hi. Well, here we are. Passover and Easter simultaneously, just about. Two of the best eating holidays in the year. And I have to say, I am making a point of not going by the Italian bakery that I like, because I know I won't be able to stop and go in. And they have savory things, too, so they probably have one of the things that I love for Easter or Easter Monday is something called, variously, pizza rustica, which just means savory pie, or could be pizza gain, which is a sort of dialectical expression of pizza chiena, which is stuffed. And basically, it's a pastry, traditionally, in the old days, with lard, filled with diced cheese and meats, ham, salamis, lots of stuff like that, and then baked in the oven. So I make one that isn't in pastry. That's a pasta version of that. Recipe is in Naples at Table, I believe. I made it for years when I was doing kind of big-time entertaining, because it's a great buffet dish. It's good hot, but even better after an hour sitting on the buffet table. Anyway, a baked pasta. But to this week, I have to say, I'm shocked at what I'm seeing in the supermarket. Things that I never expected to see in the spring. Got to say, here in Brooklyn, it's full-time spring already. I mean, some of the daffodils are already fading. But really, everything that's spring-like has sprung. but I go to the supermarket the other day, and I see that fennel bulbs are very inexpensive all of a sudden. Now, to me, this is not the season for fennel, but it makes me remind myself that there are no more seasons anymore. There's almost something good coming from somewhere that we grow ourselves or trade, meaning Canada or Mexico. For instance, the tomatoes that I just bought were grown in Canada. Now, you think they're growing out in the field in Canada? No. They're growing, of course, in a greenhouse in Canada. But they turn out really good. Those Campari tomatoes, which, by the way, is not a brand name, but a type of tomato. And they're very sweet. And I think they were created for just the way they're grown. Anyway, I go to the supermarket, and even in my fancy supermarket, meaning my overpriced supermarket, they have big fennel bulbs, $2.99 each. Now, I haven't seen that lower price in a long time, but I'm thinking it's middle of April, and we're seeing like a high season price. The high season used to be November through New Year, maybe to Valentine's Day. And I always knew it was fall because my Aunt Pauline always had fennel. She, by the way, she co-opted some Italian things that she learned growing up with Italians in the same two-family house. And she always, as soon as the fennel came on the market, my aunt had it on the table as a digestive. In those days, Italian-Americans in particular ate the fennel at the end of the meal, raw, to help their digestion. I don't know if that works or not. I do know that fennel is very high in fiber, which is one of the reasons I love it, and because it's so healthy that way. But it may be that, so it may be true, it makes you regular. In any case, they had them at $2.99 a bulb. I could not resist. They were big bulbs, too. So yesterday, I cooked one of the bulbs in a way that I don't often, but it's just in the mood. We wanted to eat pasta, so I was trying to think, how can I get this fennel into a pasta dish, and I just made it the way I normally make braised fennel and tomato, but except that I cut it differently so it would integrate with some spaghetti. So what I did was, in a deep pan, I sautéed a diced red onion, medium-sized red onion, not a big one, I do find lately, I don't know, that the red onions I've been buying melt down very nicely into the oil after not a very long cooking. So I'm liking it when I want that as a background thing. So I saute, at least I start to saute this onion, diced onion. And in the meantime, I prepare the fennel. You cut off the fronds. I mean, you can save some fronds for a garnish later, but they don't really have any flavor to speak of. So I, on a sharp angle, I cut off the stems that are coming out and the fronds, and you're left with this nice big bulb. If, by some chance, the outside of the bulb doesn't look all that fresh, you can use your vegetable peeler and just peel off a thin layer on the, from the outside. Don't waste that whole outside, and rather tough, I might add, layer, because you're going to cook it. But you do should peel off the outside. Now, if I'm doing this, as I did it to make it for spaghetti, I cut it in half through the root end, which I normally eat. But in this case, I cut out the very bottom of it. And then I sliced the fennel very thinly across to make strands of fennel. So once that was all cut up, I threw it in the pan with the onion, tossed it around in the oil for it all to get some nice oil. And then while I was doing that, I took four canned tomatoes. I have these nice San Marzano tomatoes. So I mashed up four tomatoes with a fork, and I threw them in the pot with a little bit of the puree that was in the can. Maybe it was a quarter of a cup or so, leaving me with a half a can of tomatoes in puree, which I have stored in the refrigerator. And that's it. And salt and pepper, and cover the pan, and let it simmer over very low heat. Took about 20 minutes or so before the fennel got nice and tender. And that's it. You can make that ahead, as I did. And then at the last minute, you boil up. This is enough, by the way, for more spaghetti than I made. I only make 3 ounces per person, which, by the way, is really enough. But if you're making this for more than two people, more than 6 ounces, this will cover, I would say, actually, at least three, if not four portions of spaghetti or macaroni. You don't have to have a ton of sauce, but this is a ton of sauce. So you can divide it for a while. We ate it all because, you know, it was a vegetable as well as a sauce, and we were hungry, and why not eat all that fennel? Nothing bad there. So that's, you know, one way of the many ways I make fennel. The one that Bob favors most, but I don't do it so much lately, is you cut the fennel into slices, I would say half-inch thick slices, and arrange them in one layer in a skillet. Cover the fennel. I'm sure I've done this on the air before. You cover the fennel with water, and either a nice big glug of olive oil or a tablespoon or so of butter in the pan with the water, salt, you don't have to add pepper yet, and boil it, keep boiling it until all the water has evaporated in the pan, and you will be left with a little bit of fat, either oil or butter, and you'll be able to, at the very end, saute the fennel, which is now tender, very tender, should be. If it's not, by the way, you can always add a little bit more water and continue cooking it. And I usually flip it over once during the cooking. So you let it cook in the butter or oil until it gets a tiny bit browned and caramelized, if you will. And that's it. Now, you can leave that, make it ahead. By the way, I use a no-stick skillet in this case, you can do that ahead, but at the last minute, now this started out as an accident, but now it's turned into, can we have it with cream? I bring it back to heat on top of the stove, and then I pour in about a quarter of a cup of heavy cream and let that simmer with the caramelized juices from the fennel. And you have something very special. You could put a freshly ground pepper on it at the end. I sometimes don't even want that. But that's really, I must say, And by the way, you can make that even fancier if you want. You could, I have done the boiling in a gratin pan on top of the stove and then put a lot of grated cheese on top and stuck it under the broiler. So that's really good. Another thing is salad. I mean, I think most people know fennel raw. I don't know. Do you, Jill? How do you ever eat fennel?
I actually don't.
Well, for old people like me, it's a very good vegetable. It's loaded with fiber. The other one that hardly anybody cooks, maybe even eats, is endive, sometimes called
love
Belgian
endive.
I love endive, and we eat a lot of endive because it's the easiest salad to make. Endive is grown in. It's grown in two places. First, it's grown in it's a double growth. That's why it's expensive, by the way. It's a difficult vegetable. It's actually in the chicory family, and in some countries they actually call it chicory. We call it endive, or the other name for it is witloof, witloof, and it is a Belgian kind of chicory. It's grown in the field until it gets leafy greens, and then it's pretty much harvested, and the root, which is a large taproot, is then grown in a dark circumstance environment until it produces what we call Belgian endive, which should, by me, it should be white from the bottom to almost the tip. The very, very tip can have a little green on it, or it can be pale green. But what I unfortunately see in the markets that I shop in, it's very often stored under a light, and the ends get very green. And as it gets greener, it gets more bitter. So, and if you like bitter, okay, but I find most people prefer it when it's more mild bitter. And it is endive, even when it's white, is mildly bitter. But it's very handy as a salad. I just cut it crosswise and toss it with very good oil and very good vinegar and salt. Or you could add the tiniest, if you want to make like a vinaigrette, you do oil and vinegar and a minced shallot, even a crushed anchovy, or just the tip of a knife's worth of Dijon mustard. Mustard and endive go very well together. So that's the only dressing you need. I have in the past, not lately, dressed it with the anchovy dressing that they use in Rome for puntarelle. Puntarelle is in the same chicory family, but we don't get, I mean, I know a store here in Brooklyn that has puntarelle, but when it's in season, but, you know, it's a rarity. The only reason this store has it is that they're so many Italians that shop there, or used to shop there anyway. Now the neighborhood has become more Chinese than Italian. So endive doesn't have a season either. I mean, it used to be a winter thing, but now I see it all year. I go by the price. I bought it the other day for $4.99 a pound, which is pretty much as good as it gets. Maybe you can get it for a little less if you don't live in a urban area. I don't know. It's not an easy one to find, but I like it a lot. And I cook it as well. Very easy, very simple. I could complicate it, but you know, I won't. I cut them in half, arrange them in a pan that's going to go in the oven, and drizzle them with olive oil and salt and pepper. And put them in a 400. I did it the other day only because the oven was already preheated to 450. I stuck them in the 450 degree oven and then turned the oven down to 400. But normally a 400 degree oven is fine, and I would say they take at least a half an hour, if not a little longer. And I like them just like that in that room temperature. If you want to gussy them up, I've done this. You can roll each half in a slice of prosciutto. And I would say two halves plus two slices of prosciutto is a serving. but really just as a vegetable, it's delicious. What else? I must say, the other day, I mean, it really is spring around here, my supermarket even had fiddleheads. I remember the day I planted ostrich ferns in my garden in Cornwall just so I could harvest fiddleheads. Well, of course, it takes 20 years for those ferns to take hold. And now I visited my old house not that long ago, and the ostrich ferns really have taken over a patch behind the house as I wanted them to, but as I said, it took 20 years. We forget how slowly gardens grow. Anyway, so fiddleheads never thrilled me anyway. They were $30 a pound.
Oy.
In the supermarket. Oy is right. You know, I probably would choke on them at that price. But and also, I don't see the appeal, except the fact that they're one of the first things that come up out of the ground. But I had, when I was living in the country, so to speak, where you live, the thing that I waited for to come out of the ground was the chicory and the dandelions, which are among the first things to come up in my short green growth. It was hardly a lawn. I never wanted it to be a grassy lawn. I was happy that it was green. And the earliest greens are, and I can't tell them apart when they're first coming out of the ground. Later on, I can tell the difference between dandelion and wild chicory. But at this point, they look the same to me, and they've yet to develop the furry underneath part of the leaf that, for me, is the giveaway. So, but you can go to, I'm sure, even as soon as the snow melts, Jill, and everybody, if you're in a snowy patch there, I'm sorry, it delayed your spring, but gives you time to contemplate chicory. Which, by the way, is very, very healthy. You know, nature gives you what you need. You know, like oranges in the winter when you need more vitamin C. And very tonic, very meaning full of minerals and vitamins, kind of greens that come up first thing in the spring, like chicory and dandelion.
Do you know what else is good? Is a radish.
I don't count radishes, Jill, because that's something you have to plant and wait for. I'm talking about stuff that Mother Nature feeds you in the spring, and she knows what you need. I like foraging a lot. So, and I've been on a few tours with wild man Steve Brill. Steve Brill used to be, several mayors ago, New York City's official naturalist. And I do think he still gives, I have to look this up, he still gives foraging tours all around New York City. I mean, I've been to every borough with him. Here in Prospect Park, there's a lot to eat. But there's even more to eat in Queens. And then, again, one of my favorite foraging trips was to the shore, to where I grew up, Marine Park, Sheepshead Bay, all around there. And then if you cross over into Rockaway, you've got I forget what the national park designation is, but there is a national park there. All kinds of things grow by the shore. And if you took a hike around the shore today, I'm sure you would find some things popping out of the ground that you can eat.
The whole forage thing is absolutely wonderful. And as people find out, you know, once you go on, for example, a foraging tour and find out how much is literally there.
Oh yeah, there's a lot there. Look, I didn't when I lived in Cornwall, I didn't even have to get in the car. I could have just walked along the Housatonic and found enough for lunch, depending on what season it was, of course. And I won't give away this location, but there is, and it's still there because I checked, there is a huge patch of wild grapes in Sharon that I used to go to pick grape leaves to make stuffed grape leaves. These are the best stuffed grape leaves you've ever had. Now, my next-door neighbor here in Brooklyn, a neighbor in a brownstone, grows a grapevine, which comes out of nowhere and takes over by the end of the summer. And the woman who used to live in the apartment there let me pick leaves, but she moved, and I haven't asked the new people if I can pick the leaves, but pick some wild grape leaves, and you'll be amazed at how lemony and delicious they are, not just a wrapper, but with their own flavor. And then, you know, I stuff them with the rice filling, and then you pack them into a pan and cover them with water and lemon juice, and it's, that helps the lemon flavor, too, of course, and they're really good. So, I don't know. Now, I would think every week from now until the height of summer, there's going to be something that we can forage for. I should do a little homework and figure out what we can get out of the woods in the northwest corner.
We're not going to touch the mushroom third rail, are we?
No.
Okay, good.
Because I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
I mean, I've been out to collect mushrooms, but only somebody who knows what they're doing.
When a bunch of people came up here a few years ago just because, and they said, oh, we'll go foraging for mushrooms. And
let me say, not everything that you get out of the ground is delicious. Like I said, I don't really like fiddleheads.
Fiddlehead. I agree on
the other thing. Speaking of mushrooms,
yes.
I chopped down some whatever. They weren't even trees; they were just shrubs, and planted a nice little shade garden. And the year or 2 years later, I got an enormous crop of morels, except they were white morel. So there was nothing. I knew they were not. They were not dangerous mushrooms. So I did gather them, and I did cook them. And you know what? It wasn't worth the oil and garlic that I put on.
Sorry, except that I've had a few of those. You know, it usually it's the longest, you know, anticipation that isn't worth the oil and garlic.
Well,
you put
whatever.
On.
You know, wherever there are wood chips around, you're going to get some mushrooms. So, but just, you know, be conscious that, first of all, they could kill you.
Right.
Second of all, they might not taste that good anyway.
So, and that was the first bit that people didn't, newcomers didn't quite realize. It's like, yeah, first of all, they can kill you. Second of all, everything after that is not quite relevant.
All righty.
All right. Well, it is all.
So anyway, this is sort of, for me, Passover, Easter is sort of like dangerous Hanukkah Christmas period, meaning
yeah.
You could easily gain a lot of weight. So I'm trying to be careful here. Not eat too much chocolate-covered matzah or chocolate bunnies.
The one thing that
Bob and I, we simultaneously craved yesterday was a Reese's Easter egg. You know that every season they have a different shape, and the different shapes make a difference in the flavor, and we both have a thing for the Reese's peanut butter Easter eggs, but I haven't seen any around. I haven't looked either. It's dangerous. That's like foraging itself, right?
Right.
Okay, everybody have a great week.
And
enjoy
have a good
Easter.
Rest of your holiday. Happy Passover and happy
and
Easter.
Merry Easter.
And
enjoy spring. It's going to be here whether you like it or not.
Thank you very much. This is Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.